Studio 360.
Peter Piper picked a pepper.
All right, Kurt, go ahead.
A peck of pickled peppers, Peter Piper picked. Hello, sir. This is Kurt Anderson. How are you?
Hi, Kurt. How are you?
I'm well.
You're in New York City?
I am in New York City, where you were born, weren't you? Weren't you born here?
Yes, I was.
And I've got Danish great-grandparents.
Yeah, from your name, I thought you might.
Yeah. No, and when I go there, they and I give my credit card to people, they start speaking to me in Danish as though I might speak it.
Do you understand any of it?
Zero. I very much like this movie you made.
Well, thank you.
Like the rest of humankind, I saw Viggo Mortensen play Aragorn in Lord of the Rings movies. But it was his performances in a couple of different David Cronenberg films that really made me a Viggo Mortensen fan, especially when he played this Russian mobster, Nikolai, in Cronenberg's movie Eastern Promises.
Anger is very dangerous. Makes people do stupid things. Please, forget any of this ever happened. You're in very wrong place, Anna Ivanovna. You belong in there, with nice people. People like me.
Mortensen does accents well, maybe because his life has been kind of a road movie. He grew up in Argentina and upstate New York. He has lived in Denmark and Idaho and now in Spain. Professionally, he's also many things. In addition to being an actor, he is a musician, a photographer, a poet. He has his own publishing house, and on his publishing house website, he extensively quotes the leftist icon Noam Chomsky, all of which makes him perfect for his latest role, kind of typecast in Captain Fantastic. He plays this Noam Chomsky-loving renegade who is raising his six children in the woods off the grid in the Pacific Northwest. His character's wife is hospitalized, which has left him alone with his brood in the forest.
Why does Mommy have to be gone so long?
She hasn't been gone very long.
Actually, it's been 3 months, 2 weeks, 6 days, and 11 hours.
Mom is very ill.
Don't talk to us like we're your inferiors.
Well, is right. Mom needs to be in the hospital right now.
But you said hospitals are only a great place to go if you're a healthy person and you want to die.
You said Americans are undereducated and overmedicated.
You said the AMA are avaricious whores only tooling to spread their fat legs for Big Pharma.
All of those things are true, but Mom does not have enough of the neurotransmitter serotonin to conduct electrical signals in her brain.
Exactly when is Mom coming back?
That's what I'm going to go find out.
One of the things I loved about it is that even though, okay, this guy, your character, is the hero and the children have been taught well by him to be these Noam Chomsky-worshipping lefty children, that whole thing is also made fun of. I mean, it does both, you know? You take them seriously and regard them as earnest, right-thinking, perhaps more extreme than most of us people. But they're also – but there is fun poked at them as well, which is a great trick.
Yeah. I mean, the movie does the rare thing. It has clearly delineated characters, very original characters. And you realize at a certain point, well, these are not – the heroes. There are no heroes in this movie, and there are no villains, really.
You famously prepare for roles in more than is required, and with this one, you actually went out to the woods where you shot it and lived there before the thing even started shooting.
Yeah, I was fortunate. I was able to go there because we were going to shoot that first. And so I went out, you know, way early when they found the place and they started creating this clearing. And with the director and the production designer, we talked a lot about, well, how do we make this as believable as possible?
Uh-huh.
You know, that they're self-sustaining, that hygiene is taken care of. How do they feed themselves? How does it really work? We wanted it to be brutally real, completely credible, so that it would contrast in a credible way and hence funnier in a way at times and more striking with what you see once they leave the forest. So I got to go there and help. You know, I planted the garden. I brought starter plants because we said, well, it's this time of year. This is how big it would be. And in such a clearing, this is how much sun gets there. You'd have to have raised beds, et cetera. And then, you know, Matt, the director, Matt Ross, was saying, well, we need some little solar panel. We need the, where do they wash? How do they do that?
Yeah. You mentioned Matt. Is Matt Ross the writer and director? And I saw the movie and I saw, oh, yeah, Matt Ross. Don't know who that guy is. Then yesterday, as I was doing my research, as it happens after watching the finale of Silicon Valley.
Billionaires are people, too.
I saw it's the guy who plays the villain mm-hmm. on Silicon Valley, who plays Gavin
exactly.
Belson.
Do you know who else vilified a tiny minority of financiers and progressive thinkers called the Jews?
Wait a minute. Did you just compare the treatment of billionaires in America today to the plight of the Jews in Nazi Germany?
Absolutely. One could argue that billionaires are actually treated worse. And we didn't even do anything wrong.
And it couldn't be more different. I mean, he's a really fine actor.
Astonishing.
He is very gentle, super intelligent, a good person.
As opposed to the character, the opposite.
And other jobs he's had, he's played these really weaselly kind of guys and sometimes outright bad guys. But he does it so well, and it's so much contrast with who he is.
And he has directed one very little scene feature before this. So this is his big, essentially, directorial debut. Even though there's a kind of extremism to his idealism and how he's decided to raise his children and live more off the grid than any of us, most of us can imagine, he reminded me, I mean, his straightforwardness with his children reminded me actually of my parents. And just like which astounded many of my friends in how frank they were, you know.
Yeah.
Even though, you know, we lived in a house and my father was a lawyer. But were you raised like that, or did you raise your son that way?
In some ways, I raised my son that way. I certainly wasn't. I was a product of a fairly conventional model, 1950s model. Father, you don't see him that often. He's at work. He gets in late. He may or may not tuck you in. On weekdays, weekends, you might see him a little bit, might do some things. I do have good memories of doing things with him, of being, you know, taken with my brothers to go camping, fishing, learning to hunt at an early age, probably too early. But I was like 4.
Oh, that's a little young.
Yeah. I shot my first duck when I was 4 years old,
really?
Sitting in his lap with him holding the butt of the shotgun against his shoulder and me aiming and him being shocked that I actually hit it.
And that's what's great about this character is that he's a hard-ass, old-school, like, guy in supervising them very, very closely. And
it's a rigorous training. They go through intellectual,
training.
Physical.
And yet he's not a right-wing survivalist. He's this commie.
But what's great, and you touched on this earlier when you were saying that at some point you realize, oh, it's not, this model isn't entirely condoned. It's not entirely condemned either.
Right.
I think on the plus side, the guy I play, Ben, the father of these 6 kids, wildly intelligent and, ferocious wolf pack of kids, I guess. One thing's unquestionable. He loves them and he's present and he is not the kind of dad that just says no because I said so.
Right.
He's the kind of dad that says perhaps not and let me explain why. And if you have a counterargument, I'd love to hear it.
Right.
It takes being truly present and it involves making mistakes because you may not always be right,
right.
Or
and he
on
does.
The right track.
And he does.
Yeah, and you see this in the story in a beautiful way. And then there's that test. You know, you're watching as an audience and you're wondering, okay, is he going to realize that at some point? Because we've already realized it, that he's on the wrong track and he's too extreme in some ways. And the very rigidity that he is so against in society and in any family model, he's actually engaging in it by being morally uncompromising. He is
exactly.
in a way. My son put it this way when he saw the movie. He said, by being morally uncompromising, he's inadvertently compromising his morals. And I thought that was a very astute observation by my son.
Yeah.
And you know, so it's not all perfect by any means.
Yeah. You became famous really not until your 40s. I mean, you'd had this acting career and I'd seen you and I was aware of you, but you became famous with Lord of the Rings, the 3 Lord of the Rings movies.
You're outnumbered, Aragorn. You need more men.
There are none. mountain. Murderers. Traitors. You would call upon them to fight. They believe in nothing. They answer to no one. They will answer to the King of Gondor.
Are you grateful for that and what it's permitted you to do since?
Yeah, I mean, Lord of the Rings was an incredibly ambitious project, which was successful beyond anybody's imagination.
Right.
You know, when we were shooting it, you're hoping that people are going to like it, but we had no idea it would be such a phenomenon. It obviously gave us many more options, and I mean, it just helped me have more options to do what I'd always been doing, which is look for interesting stories without any thought to what the budget is or nationalities.
Right.
Just I like stories that challenge me, that I'm going to learn something that I think will stand the test of time as being at least a great, you know, ideas, unique ideas for storytelling. But as far as The Lord of the Rings, yeah, it gave me the chance to work with Cronenberg.
Right.
Probably indirectly, it has something to do with the fact that Matt Ross could say, well, I want Viggo to play this guy, you know, in Captain Fantastic.
He's kind of bankable, right?
And the producer said, yeah, okay.
And does, I presume you made, if not $1 jillion, enough money that you can then pick and choose and say, nah, that's a piece of crap. I don't want to do that.
Well, I made, you know, money in Lord of the Rings, but I mean, I wasn't a known factor before that. So it wasn't like they had to offer me a ton of money to do it.
Right.
But the movie has done so well that, you know, we've gotten residuals and done very well. It's helped me with the money I made in Lord of the Rings. I could start Percival Press in 2002, the publishing company I have. I could do other things. I could help people, give money away. And I could also do, as I've done in the past 7 years, many movies where I didn't get paid anything or very little. Yeah, sure. I mean, movies like How Ha.
The Argentine movie you started in last year. Beautiful movie.
Well, in fact, How Ha, because I was a producer on it and one of the people that put some money into it. I mean, I lost money on that movie.
Which is of course, the not the standard thing. The standard thing would, oh, look at what I did. Now I can do Bourne Identities and James Bond films and Captain Fantastic as a comic book movie, you know?
Well, I don't know. It comes down to how much money do you need? It's like, you know, you become famous and then you start selling watches and perfumes and cars.
You should do that.
And people do that and it's like, great. I don't know. I guess you could do that and give all that money to charity. Who knows? Everybody can do whatever they want.
I'm Jen Aniston and I'm here to talk to you about Smartwater.
Dolce & Gabbana, the one.
Easy, breezy, beautiful, cover girl.
I've been driving a Lincoln since long before anybody paid me to drive one.
I look at that stuff, and first of all, when I see people basically being models, when I'm looking at an actor doing that, and they may have their great reasons for doing it, and that's fine. I'm not criticizing it. Just as an audience member, for me, no matter how good a job they do in a movie, I can't completely erase the image of them selling a watch or a perfume or a dress or a car from my mind. It's a more of a leap of faith.
Yep.
They really, really have to hit it out of the park for me to forget that. So that's just as an audience member, I mean, you know, everybody's different how they look at movies. That's how I look at them. And the other thing is, I just say, well, how much money do you need? You know,
right.
I mean, life is short. Yep. Make things that you're going to be proud of 10, 20 years down the line.
So as a Dane as well as an American and somebody who lives in Spain, how does the spectacle of imminent European disintegration strike you?
Well, I mean, it's been a long time coming. I can remember back when the Prime Minister was Edward Heath, and when they first joined, I guess it was around 72 or whenever it was, the common market in, you know, Great Britain, there was always misgivings, like there were in Denmark and other places about it. But, you know, so some countries like Denmark, like England, you know, kept
Norway
their own currency.
And,
you know, Great Britain has always put conditions on their membership.
Right.
And they've done, frankly, in my opinion, the government anyway, done a lot of whining about it. And, you know, I understand.
Yeah.
And so it's like, okay, you want to go, go. I liken it, and so I thought about it in terms of the movie in a way. choosing to isolate yourself because you want to perfect your own unique way of being, which is one of the arguments that don't necessarily have anything to do with unfounded fear of immigration, of the other, or, you know, whatever, you know, economic
fears. We want our perfect little world,
Yeah, we want to have our uniqueness, and we want to we want to foster it, and we don't want to lose it. We don't want to be beholden to anyone. That's not unlike what the Cash family does in Captain Fantastic, you know, by living off the grid. But one of the dangers of that glorious isolation and working on your own uniqueness is that you're closing yourself off to contact with others. And you can't learn, you know, kids, as we see in the movie, can't learn how to interact with others.
Right.
Just from books.
Yep.
You know, you have to go out and practice getting along or not getting along with people and negotiating how you interact with people. Yeah. That's only can come from experience.
Well, Captain Fantastic is a guide to life. It's everything. It's Brexit. It's parenting.
There you go. There you go.
Viggo Mortensen, this has been a delight. Thank you very, very much.
I love this conversation. Thank you so much for your time. It's been great talking with you.
Captain Fantastic is in theaters now. And by the way, this is some of Viggo's music off his brand new album. It's a track called Summer's Here.